intertextual cardboard experience.
Hello and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience. We have our terrific 20th guest, Alicia Giroux. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show. As a, I didn't give any sort of introduction, but you are an artist who does art in a whole bunch of different mediums, and I'm really excited to hear about all the different things that you create for. But I would say, or at least in terms of, you know, published and to be published, board games have kind of started getting into creating art for board games as well. Does that seem like accurate timeline wise, or?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I always have trouble kind of defining what I do for a living because it's kind of fluid. I jokingly say that I've kind of had my hands in a little bit of everything, and as it stands right now, board games are my number one, and I'm really loving it.
Yeah, that's super cool because, yeah, like I said, I, you know, eventually down the line we can talk about some of the really neat things that you have done and are still like working on, just kind of accessible through your different social medias and store and everything like that. But yes, so the recent games that you've, or at least as far as I can see on your page and own and have backed, are with both All Play and Bitewing Games. So you did the art for Lunar, and then the upcoming Shuffle and Swing and Cat Blues. And then I forgot there's like a little colon after Cat Blues as well, right?
Yeah, so those are the three published board games that I have out, and I currently have two in the works. So yeah, you've got it right.
Awesome. All right. Well, the ones in work, I'm definitely looking forward to as well. And I think by the time we get through and just hearing all the different things that you're thinking about when creating and your inspiration and everything like that, I'll be like even more excited than I already was. So
that sounds good.
Okay, so you kind of just mentioned that, you know, you do a little bit of everything. You have like created for different spaces, but if we could just start off by you going through like your background in art, some of the different mediums that you have worked on, and then how that did kind of transition to board games.
Yeah, for sure. I'll try and keep it succinct. I've always been in the arts. I was always kind of like an artsy kid growing up, and I'm lucky that I grew up in a space that I feel like really nurtured that. And career-wise, I actually went to school for graphic design, which had very little artistic training, but it had a lot of fundamental training, especially in the realms of, you know, how to create digitally, and especially like how to do, you know, proper print files and things like that. And so I kind of meshed my own personal artistic journey with all the knowledge that I got in school. And yeah, it's kind of been a roller coaster since then. I was lucky enough to, I worked in sign shops starting off. So like I learned some basic typography and stuff. And then I worked in a print shop or like a design studio for about 10 years. And so that allowed me to learn how to do, you know, fancy package design. And we did everything from, you know, food to products to beer to coin packages, all sorts of cool stuff. Yeah. And then as I grew and my skills developed and I became, got a little bit of a name for myself, the board game community kind of like creeped onto my radar about 3 years ago. And I had to laugh when it happened because it was Joe Wiggins actually who gave me my first big contract. And I think it was him who said something like, now you're in the community and you can never leave. And I kind of laughed at the time. And it's kind of been true. It's like my best clients the past 2 years or so have all been board games. So that's kind of like a fast forwarded version of my career path that's led up to this point. But yeah, it's been awesome.
Oh, that's really neat. And just kind of so, well, I've got a follow-up question before a follow-up question. So you said that you had your, you know, your schooling and kind of background in graphic design. So do you feel like, well, a couple things. Do you feel like any of kind of the art that you create for games takes into account the graphic design like elements that you have, you know, or, you know, I don't know how, I think different companies will work in different ways, but, you know, how much of a kind of communication channel is there? Or do you like just get your art in and then a graphic designer does their stuff? Or do you feel like you've done graphic design or do you want to? I don't know. That's like a bunch of
Yeah,
questions.
I'll do my best to answer that. So generally, like working with Allplay and working with Bitewing, they are big enough that they have, you know, a few people on board for most projects, at least in my experience. So, you know, you've got your game designer who's on board to make sure everything's balanced and correct. You've got myself, like the artists that are tasked with coming up with the look and feel and execution of the final artwork. And then you have the graphic designers who are responsible for, you know, adding the numbers and the text and the typography and getting everything laid out properly, you know, in box files and stuff before it goes to print. So I think what's been really helpful in terms of my background and my education is that I have done all of these, maybe not the game design, but I've done all these different aspects. So I know how to deliver good art files. I know how to work with all these different design programs. So yeah, there's a lot of overlap. There's also like a lot of stress sometimes that comes with hitting like the print button and sending it off to manufacturing and, you know, praying that everything is 100% good. So sometimes I'm kind of glad that that's someone else's job to like hit that button. But yeah, no, it's all very intertwined. So yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah, and then do you feel like I don't know, maybe you are already doing some of it in future product or projects, but do you feel as if getting into board games and both art and graphic design is something you want, or are you pretty like, do you feel like good with where you're at and doing, you know, art and illustrations?
Ooh, that's a good question. I've always joked in the past that I went to school for design, but I'm like a imposter syndrome graphic designer, but a real illustrator. I can do it. I can do it. I definitely have like more confidence in illustration for sure. And yeah, so I think, oh gosh, I'm not quite sure how to answer this. I love doing everything, don't get me wrong. It's the art, I definitely have a there's more flow to it for me, and the graphic design is more of like a task, I guess. But it's still great. Like I recently wrapped up this project with New Mill Games. His name is Dan Newman, and there was definitely more of a graphic design component for that, and I'm really happy with how it turned out. Like I think it looks great. So yeah, I enjoy it all, I guess is what I'm saying.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm excited for that because well, some of my episodes well actually have talked about you know, trick-taking games a little bit here and there, and that's what, you know, New Mill Games primarily is focusing on is those card games, and I have a few. So
Yeah,
I
he's great.
yes, that yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, that's probably one of the communities that I communicate in the most is some of those trick-taking discords. So I see Dan there a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I will say the community is definitely really connected. It's been pretty cool. Like when Dan and I were talking, he said that he had just come back from a trick-taking convention, and I went, "There's a whole convention for the." I didn't know. It was this whole new world for me. And we ended up working together because I had worked previously with Allplay and Lunar, which was a trick-taking quartet that they had published. And he had worked on one of the quartets, one of the pieces, one of the other games. And we were just kind of on each other's radar on social media. And then one day I posted about Lunar, and he went, "Oh, you worked on that. We should work together." And so, yeah, it's great. There's so much cross-pollination in the industry, and I think it's great.
Yeah, it is funny. So, I mean, I just kind of thinking about like part of my exploration in the podcast is thinking about connections between, you know, board games and other mediums. But then as I'm doing it and I'm talking to people and the number of people that I'm talking to, you know, sometimes obviously, you know, just, you know, if I, you know, talked to, you know, Nick Murray, so obviously that I would have familiarity with, you know, Bitewing Games, would have played some, bought some, and then can always am following. So that's why, like, I think it'd be a natural flow to want to talk to other people that, you know, Nick has worked with. But I have, you know, encountered other instances where it's like, oh, just all these people have worked together in different ways, and Maybe one day I'll make one of those kind of oh shoot, like a crime board where I like trying to connect like where everybody
Conspiracy theory board with the red string.
yeah, it'll just be that, but like all the games and all the people have worked and see where they overlap, but
Oh man, that'd be wild. Because in my experience in this industry so far, and actually this is true, I think, for a lot of art and design industries, is it's all who you know. It's all word of mouth. I'd say probably 90% of my clientele is word of mouth. So it's all that conspiracy theory board at the red string. Everybody's connected, nobody's an island.
Well, I mean, on top of that, though, I mean, you've got a pretty solid social media following. So it's not just word of mouth, it's people seeing the work that you're creating and being extremely impressed by it. So I guess kind of a follow-up question that I have with that then too is I'm not a visual artist by any stretch of imagination, any type of like terminology or classification or anything like that, I definitely lack. So I guess how would you describe your art style and then also inspiration too, whether it's like other like artists or just kind of like the things that you see or both?
Oh, good question. My art style, I feel like, is kind of ever evolving. It's a little all over the place. I have a portfolio that you can view, and sometimes I stand back and look at it and go, I love everything I've done, but there's definitely there's like three or four styles floating around. So in terms of defining it, that's really tricky. But I'd say like a consistent theme is always wildlife or creatures. I've never been one for illustrating people necessarily. I've always kind of gravitated towards creatures and all the different animals and all the shapes and forms they come in. And I just find it wildly inspiring. It's always been such a drive for me. And especially when it comes to illustrating animals in like non-realistic ways. So more like interpretational or abstract ways. So, Cat Blues is kind of like that. Cat Blues is a very kind of cartoony, angular graphic style versus Lunar, which is more of a semi-realistic kind of spooky style. Yeah, and I'd also say another thread or another theme throughout my work is a lot of it tends to be a little spooky. I just like that. I like that vibe. I kind of like the Halloween feel for things. Yeah, and in terms of inspiration and sorry, what was the second half of the question? Inspiration, like other artists?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, you kind of answered a part of the inspiration in, like wildlife and animals as part of
Yeah.
it, but if I guess then any other kind of, other examples of art or artists
Yeah.
that would be people that I guess you would think as inspirations as well.
Oh man, we'd be here for hours, I think, if I listed every artist that I admire. I can kind of start like one of the first artists that really impacted me from a young age was Robert Bateman. He's an older Canadian illustrator. He or artist. He does these beautiful wildlife acrylic paintings, and he's quite well known. I'd say quite a few people in Canada probably have a print of his in their house somewhere. And I loved his work growing up, not just because of his skill, but because of how he communicated. Or rather injected interest into his pieces. So, anyone, there's many artists that could paint, an acrylic wolf or something like that. But in his case, he might paint, something like a dark forest. And you think that's all it is until you really, really look, and then you'll see the creatures looking back at you. Or you'll see like a big snowy landscape, and you have to search around, and eventually you'll find, the snowy owl. And I just liked how engaging his artwork felt. I'm kind of rambling here, but it had a huge impact on me where I was like, oh man, you can actually, take something a step further and make your pieces really memorable or evoke a feeling. And so yeah, he was a huge, huge inspiration for me growing up. I'm trying to think now. And in terms of like modern artists that I like, of course I'm gonna freeze now that I have to think on the spot. But there's some artists out there that I look at their work. Like there's this guy named oh gosh, I'm gonna say his name wrong. I think it's Corey Brickley, and he is such a master of color and just abstract shapes and broad strokes while also keeping to an element of realism. And every time I see his work, sometimes I just save it because I'm like, I want to try something with this color palette. Like, how did you do that? How did you make red and green actually function together? I need to know. So yeah, there's just I all of my social media feeds are very, very filtered and catered to just art. So it's a very positive space for me. And yeah, I just love seeing people's work and just marveling at it and constantly trying to learn off what other people do.
That's really cool. And
Yeah.
yeah, I think yeah, I well, first off, if I mean if and when, and I know that I already have, if I say, you know, art or illustrations or whatever it is, I probably will misspeak in some capacity. But nonetheless, I did type in Robert Bateman, and a lot of these works definitely look like familiar. Like, yeah,
Yeah.
I couldn't have ever come up with that name, but on well, Google right here, it says that he just had his 94th birthday a couple days ago. So,
Oh gosh, yeah. He's still kicking.
yeah.
Yeah, no, he's wonderful and his work is all over the place. But yeah, I encourage you to look at his more subtle pieces that have hidden things in them. Those are my favorite.
Yeah, I'll definitely like, I think now with having like a few more people on social media feeds, I'm starting to get a little bit more art, and I'm excited. I'll make sure that that becomes a thing, because it's mostly running related stuff.
I mean, everyone's got their own catered feed, right?
Yeah,
So,
that too. I'll diversify mine a little bit, like board games, obviously, and running.
it sounds good to me, to be honest. Sounds very, very often, very positive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely not a bad way to go. But we'll infuse a little bit more art too. Oh, cool. So you mentioned already that you are kind of starting to, well, not like fully transitioned to, but the majority of your work lately has been for board games. So are board games is gaming kind of a part of your past, and like I guess, well, if that's the case, is it an interesting like connection as like how that all came to be, and has that changed like in any way with you creating more for board games recently?
Yeah, that's a good question. So board games have always been something that I really enjoyed. There was definitely a bracket of my childhood where that was one of my favorite things. Like if I can think of some board games that really impacted me at a young age, I liked the spookier games. So there was one in the 90s called 13 Dead End Drive. I don't know if you know this one at all. Okay,
No.
gosh. It was my favorite thing. And it was the first board game I ever saw that wasn't just dice and pieces. It was like this, like a haunted house that you would build. It had all these components and it was kind of spooky and there was trap doors and chandeliers that could fall on characters. And I just remember playing that thinking like that was the coolest thing ever. Like that was such an evolution of board games in my opinion. And then games like Nightmare, where you played that game, you were like in a graveyard, and you would play a VHS while you played the game, and as you tried to escape this graveyard, and occasionally this like ghoul would appear on screen, and he would tell you what to do, or call you names, or throw you into a grave pit or something. And like little 8-year-old me was so into this; it was so spooky and strange. But yeah, it kind of showed me that board games could be more than just snakes and ladders and stuff like that. It was quite an exciting time, I felt. And then there was like a gap where I feel like I didn't touch them for ages. And then I feel like, towards college, there was like this board game revolution where board game cafes started popping up. And I think it was kind of like a side effect of everybody being online so much. Like we were starting to enter the realm of social media at the time, and everyone is, I think, is very exciting, but we weren't seeing each other face to face as much. And board games were this sort of new, like third space everybody could go to start playing again. So yeah, and I loved it. As soon as we got back into that, I was playing things like Betrayal at House on the Hill and Munchkin and stuff like that. And I think we were playing almost every weekend for quite a while. I spent a lot of money at board game cafes. Yeah, and so sorry, what was the second half of that question?
Yeah,
Like, how did it
yeah.
influence what I do?
Yeah, no. So yeah, I that those are like right on with kind of like your gaming background. So I guess kind of like the part two or the follow-up would be, since starting to, work more for board games, do you feel like that has like changed any of your gaming at all? Like, are you trying to like, I guess, maybe search out different types, like, something like Lunar, and creating for a like a trick-taking game? Like, are you like, I guess, like where are you looking, and what are you playing these days?
That's a really good question. It's funny because with Lunar, so my family's huge into euchre. It's something they would always play when they got together. And I never learned how to play it. I was always, I don't know, I guess just not super into it. And then Lunar was kind of like euchre. And when I learned how to play Lunar, I was like, oh my God, this is so much fun. So it changed my opinion on some games, I guess. And in terms of like how it's changed my, I guess my perspective on things, now that I see about like how much work goes into polishing these games and making sure they're functional and fun, I have so much of a more additional, I think, respect and awe for people who make really good games. Because I myself have sat down and been like, I'm going to invent a game, and I try and come up with something, and it's so hard to make something that isn't easily broken. So yeah, the more I work with these guys, the more I just have such more respect for everything that goes into it.
Awesome. Very neat. Awesome. So I think that's like a good kind of transition spot. And going from, well, okay, here's the deal. I'm sure on the podcast in some capacity I have gone over the fact that my purchasing habits or they are what they are. Sometimes I just buy games, and like seeing that the Jazz project that Bitewing came out with, so that had Shuffle and Swing and Cat Blues. Those are the two that you worked on, and then there was another one as well. I can't remember the title.
They're of the three that are published currently.
Yeah, that were just kickstarted not super long ago.
Oh, it was oh gosh, yeah, that was part of the trilogy for
Yeah.
the jazz games. I feel ter Bebop. It's called Bebop.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So there are three games there, and I mean, I kind of looked into them a little bit, but we'll just say that I went into that purchase. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get these games. Like, we'll let it be. But the Shuffle and Swing, if I'm not mistaken, from the very little that I've looked into it before, just I'm like, yeah, I'll get this game. It looks neat. It's kind of a like middleweight Euro, quote unquote, with like a lot of like circles and kind of like rondelles that work together. Is that
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that might be a Nick Murray question.
Oh, okay.
I kind of know because like I was in part of like the initial like pitch for the game.
Yeah.
But I don't always know all of the rules of the games that I work on. But this one in particular, I know like the lore behind it,
Okay.
which is you are cats that work for mice in a kind of instrument construction workshop where you like the cats are kind of like the architects or the builders, and the mice are the project managers, and you're building giant instruments for giants, of course being human beings, which are so much larger. And you're kind of I'm not quite sure if you're trying to construct the most instruments or you're trying to construct or have like the most points by the end of the round. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Like it's quite a large board game. And there's I think a dozen different instruments you can choose from. So you can build, clarinets or cellos or banjos or a pipe organ or something. And yeah, it's quite vast, but it looks really cool, and I'm eager to give it a play.
Awesome. Yeah, so going from kind of like doing some design, first one being, a card game, and playing that, and realizing your kind of roots in euchre and what I've done
Yeah.
there, to like this pretty like eclectic in a cool way middleweight Euro. Yeah, I'm looking at it. It looks like it's like a dice placement. So like has
Yeah.
these like little circles and that's what you're doing. So we'll definitely be able to see like how that goes for you when, well, when it comes out. But for that one, you, I think just looking at one of your posts and kind of just in terms of credits as well, it shows that Gary Chalk, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, was the lead artist there, and that you did assets for that.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a story behind that. Do you mind if
Oh, yeah.
I
So
share it?
that's definitely what that's what I'm
Yeah.
here for. So that's the question.
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, when I started first working for Nick Murray, who is with Biteman Games, who by the way is just like a super swell human. You've had him on here. He reached out to me and he was like, "Hey, you know, we've got this shuffle and swing game. Do you want to work on it?" I said, "Yeah, absolutely. This sounds great." And then before we started, before anything had begun, he actually came back to me and he said, "Hey, we're actually going to give you a different board game, which was Cat Blues." He said, "If you're okay with that," he said, "the original illustrator we reached out to for this first game for Shuffle and Swing," he said, "just got back to us, and he said, you know, are you okay with the shuffling around of projects?" And I was like, "Yeah, go ahead." And then I said, "Oh, you know, out of curiosity," I said, "who's the illustrator?" And he said, "Oh, it's Gary Chalk," and I kind of just about fell out of my chair. Because I grew up reading these books as a kid, which was the Redwall series, which is kind of like this medieval sort of setting with these, you know, mice and rabbits and all these creatures. And I just, they were my favorite things growing up. And Gary Chalk was one of the illustrators who worked on these books, especially he did all like the black and white chapter illustrations. And I was mind blown. And so I kind of laughed and was like, you know what? Honored to be shot down. This is fine with me. I was like, but no, I got to work on Cat Blues, which turned out to be, you know, fantastic. And then later down the line, after a few months, Biteman came back to me and they said, "Hey, you know, we have all these additional assets need to be made. Would you mind working with the style that Gary Chalk came up with and try to create some more assets?" And I was really nervous. I went, "Okay, you know, sure, sounds good." And yeah, so he sent me at the time were hand-drawn illustrations that Gary had completed, and because he's a traditional artist, I think he's in his 70s now, and he draws, you know, to scale, you know, and the artwork that they sent me, I was in awe. You know, it was these high resolution, gigantic illustrations, and they were just beautiful. I just couldn't get over the detail. And then I was also really honored that they sort of entrusted me with sort of taking that style and carrying it forward. And so my job was to create these instrument assets. Yeah, so I was very flattered. I was also it was such a weird feeling to kind of be considered in the same, I guess, skill space as this illustrator who had such an impact on my childhood. And then when the project was, you know, wrapped up, I actually emailed Gary because we didn't speak while we were collaborating. He was making his work, I was making mine, and I sent him a message afterwards. And I just, you know, very politely said I was, you know, I was the other illustrator on the project, and I just had to say, you know, it was just an honor to work alongside a legendary artist like yourself. And he wrote back and he was just so kind and so lovely. And then he said lovely things to say. And then he signed off with, "By the way, you're not legendary until you're dead." And he was just such a sweetheart about it. Yeah, so that was just a really lovely, I think, kind of ego boosting experience for me. So yeah.
That is so cool. And I mean, like you said, just kind of the way in which it, you know, came full circle, went back to like childhood, went back to like, you know, your love of his work like previously. And just kind of looking, I mean, he's done a good chunk of you know, art for board games, but not necessarily a ton recently, you know, like if I'm just kind of here and on Board Game Geek, it could be wrong, but you know, past like 20 years, like a handful of projects. So the fact that kind of like worked out this way is really neat.
Yeah, I had to kind of pinch myself, and I went through, I still have all my old Redwall books from when I was a kid, and I found my extremely dog-eared copy of Redwall that I lent out to so many friends as a kid that like the covers held together with tape and glue. And sure enough, on the first page, Brian Jakes being the author and then illustrated by Gary Chalk under it. And it was surreal to kind of hold this piece that, this book I've had since I was I don't know how old. And then, kind of want to tell my 8-year-old self that, if you just keep drawing, one day you'll get to work alongside this guy. Yeah, it was just it's very surreal and extremely special.
That's really neat, and that's just like such a cool story, and kind of well, ties into what like kind of like how you worked on that project with the assets, and when I initially re reached out because I saw that you'd like written in a couple of like your posts about working for the two games that. There was that Redwall connection and that you still had the book and all that. So when I just kind of like reach out to you about some of the things to talk about, I just put
I did see that. Yeah, that was one of your points in the
It's
email,
just like
just a single word.
Redwall. But oh, that's super awesome. And I actually maybe a few years ago bought at least a couple of the Redwall books for my wife because she like read a whole bunch of them when she grew up, but I haven't actually read any myself, so they're here because I bought them, and
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to have to. Well, they're on my read list, but there's a million things that are on my read list, so I'll bump
Yeah,
it
you
up.
should. Yeah. They're really lovely. I not quite sure what the experience is like reading it as an adult. I still think they're great. I've gone back and I've read a handful over the past couple of years, but yeah, it's just one of those things that's just near and dear to my heart. I'll actually add one more little thing to that. Speaking of games. The very first game I ever worked on wasn't a board game. It was a tabletop role-playing game, TTRPG. And it was for a guy named James Hanley. And it was a role-playing game based on Redwall. So that was my first kind of toe into the industry, I guess, was this. It was called Primrose is the game. And I'm not sure if many people know about it. So yeah, if you love Redwall and you love sort of the D&D-esque experience, yeah, he did a really lovely job with it. And yeah, he was my first commission, like illustration job when it came to games. So yeah, there's another Redwall connection.
Yeah. Oh, that's neat. And yeah, I now that you say that, I just clicked on the like drive-through RPG link
Yes, yeah.
for it as well. And I remember seeing that and like that's what Redwall popped up like again. So I saw it in a few spots and I wrote it down as one word.
Awesome.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't know if it's been compared or if Cole Worley, the designer of it, came out like flat out said in a designer diary or something or an interview about his inspiration or part of inspiration for the board game Root, but I want to say that I've heard or read it, but I hear and read a lot of board game related things, but I think that ultra popular game has some inspiration in the Redwall world as well.
Yeah, I think that's great. There's a handful of things I've seen out there that I would say are Redwall inspired. I'd like to think Redwall was the first one. I'm not 100% sure, but I know a lot of people were super into it. There's actually a local publishing company here in my city, and they do Humblewood. So Humblewood also kind of reminded me of that. It's a little more magic-y than like Redwall was pretty grounded. I say grounded in reality, but they're talking animals. But this one's like you got wizards and clerics and druids and stuff like that. But same idea, you can play as crows or badgers or hedgehogs, and yeah, I think it's kind of like a timeless theme, and I love seeing it all.
That's really cool. And just being able to like have that come out and like have I don't I mean the kind of like the story or the theme for Shuffle and Swing maybe doesn't inherently seem Redwallish, but having these animal characters making the
Maybe it's like a modernized version of Redwall where they all have to get jobs.
They're sent in from like Epic Quest and whatever is going on to like making instruments for people. But nonetheless, you do have the animals and the art, and I'm super excited for both of those games to come out, so.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm excited to hold the physical versions when they're ready.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll definitely like have to reach out after I play it and then, see how all that went for you too.
For sure.
Hey, okay. So that experience was just kind of a very, coincidental and like serendipitous collaboration and being able to, do some like art assets with like based on Gary's work as well. So I guess in any kind of like the current projects you have been working on or potentially anything in the future, like do you, I guess, okay, sorry, twofold. So in kind of like other art projects that you've done before board games and or kind of currently too, like how has that collaboration process like worked? So in this instance, it sounds like you were just sent some things and asked to work on them, but I guess what other types of collaboration can you do?
Ooh, are you thinking more like what kind of collaborations I've done in the past with certain clients?
Yeah, I think that's the question.
Yeah, okay, cool. So it kind of depends. So I've kind of done a few different sorts in the past. Like I've done the thing where I'm just, the in-house designer at a studio and a client comes in and has a vision and it's your job to execute it. And if the client is pretty strict, it tends to be not quite as fun. If the client is more has more trust in you, it tends to be a more enjoyable experience. And that's certainly, I think anyone who's worked in a design studio can talk about that. When it comes to the board game industry and the collaborations that I've experienced here, it's just been so darn fun. I just think, like I kind of joked before, I said I think the people in the board game industry are genuinely the most some of the most fun clients I've ever had, and the collaboration experience has been just so lovely. So I guess if I can sort of elaborate on that, when it came to working for Allplay, for working for Joe Wiggins, who was my first board game client, he had found a piece of art of mine, and he said, this it was this piece I'd done for a short comic, which was a collaboration with a writing friend of mine called By Fire. And it was this sort of wolf against a fiery background. And he said, this is the vibe we're going for. Would you be interested in executing, four or five more pieces in this style to make into a card game? I was like, two thumbs up. Like, absolutely. That sounds great. And that's also great direction. We like this. Can you expand on it? And very little, feedback, I guess. He was just very happy with everything and everything went great. And yeah, so that was like a very, I guess, frictionless experience. And then a slightly different experience, which was with working with Bitewing, with Nick Murray. So he came to me with initially Shuffle and Swing and then Cat Blues. And Cat Blues was my first experience in designing like a really large card game. So it wasn't just five cards, it was 110 plus something like that cards. And that collaboration was kind of funny because, when Nick and I started talking, he said, or rather I gave him the same spiel that I give most of my clients, which is, here's my process, you get so many sketches and then you get mood boards and then, we pick a direction and then you get this many. And he kind of just hand waved and went, I just want you to make something that you would be proud of. And I just like, by the time I picked my jaw off the floor, because I don't think anyone's ever said that, of just absolute full trust, and which was extremely flattering. But yeah, that was, he was obviously there to give good feedback, but it was just like a carte blanche, like just do something you think would look really rad. And it was almost a little paralyzing. I'd never had that kind of freedom before. But yeah, and again, he was great. Like I was constantly just feeding him work, and he had, you know, if there was feedback, it was very succinct and very clear, and it was lovely. So yeah.
So for Cat Blues, and there are 110 different cats.
Oh gosh, I don't know the exact number. So I can tell you a little bit about the challenge of creating for this game. So there's 15, if I'm remembering correctly, I could be wrong. I think there's 15 different cats, and then every cat comes in four or five different colors. And then there's also cards that are like tip cards. So they're like open instrument cases. So I think there's four of those. Ooh, and then there's like tokens and stuff. But yeah, whatever 15 times six is, or six or seven, something like that, is like how many color cards I had to come up with. So when we talk about the graphic design background, I think that saved me in that because of my graphic design background, I knew how I could create something flexible enough in a format that I wouldn't go insane if I had to make any tiny changes across like 100 plus cards. It's kind of hard to explain, but I kind of figured out how to do it in a cool vector way that was like flexible. So yeah, it was a challenge, but we figured it out in the end, and yeah, it was a mountain we were able to climb to produce that much artwork.
Great. I've definitely seen, you know, some of the art for that game and some of the cats and everything, and yeah, it's fantastic. So
Oh, thank you.
I'm really excited to have like all of them, and then I'll look at like each one, just throw them in a row. I hear all
Yeah, for sure.
the cats.
Actually, while I was working on it too, I was besides like the jazz inspiration, you know, I had these jazz playlists going. I was also, you know, if I had to think of the next sort of character cat to draw, I would just think of the pets of my friends. So a lot of cats in that game are either my own pets or pets I've had or pets of my friends that I've sort of tried to capture their personalities in cards. So yeah.
Wow, that's super sweet, and
Yeah.
yeah, that's fun. And I mean, that's I mean, here's kind of like, well, like a minor quick tangent, but you know, I think things like that will exist in like a game design, or you know, the background story, or the art, and that's not necessarily something that everybody knows, you know, all the time. I mean, I think, you know, by reading a designer diary or listening to an interview or something like that, people are like, oh, that's like a really like cool thing that happened. But I mean, like, doesn't really, I mean, it's not going to like affect you if you didn't know that that existed. But if you do, it's like, oh, this is somebody's animal, like their spirit, their essence that is
Yeah,
on this card.
absolutely. And I think that kind of goes back to like having some insight on how board games are created, which I think is kind of the essence of this podcast, is, you know, there's so much imagination and thought and careful consideration that goes into it. But yeah, like I'll add one more thing really quick. If you ever do play Cat Blues, there's one card on there that is like this really fluffy striped cat, and he's playing a saxophone. And he's a little more rotund than the other cats. He's quite fluffy. And so that cat was actually my cat, Monty. And Monty was he lived to 18, and he was just the best. And I, you know, everyone can talk to World's End about how much they love their cats. And the day Cat Blues launched on Kickstarter was actually the day I lost him. And so but you know what? I got 18 amazing years with him. And then I kind of reframed it as like, well, he's gonna live on as this mischievous card that, you know, so many an untold amount of people are going to play. And that gave me such a good feeling, I guess. So yeah, if you play it, keep an eye out for his card.
100%. That is very sweet, and everything, all the
Yeah.
emotions, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay. This question, well, kind of talked about the collaborative process a little bit, and so this one's going to be kind of tricky, inherently, because I mean, you know, I think, well, in so many different spaces, there's so many extremely talented artists and everything like that. And you know, there are a bunch of people who are creating fantastic art and design for board games. Who is a particular board game artist that you think a collaboration with would just yield like a unique like artistic design?
Ooh, that's a good question. Like, which of the artists I admire do I think should get into the board game industry?
Either that or like one that exists in the board game or something that you feel like if you were to kind of like collaborate with them and then, mix some art assets would
That's such a
what
good question. I there's someone who comes to mind who does an art style that may not be your first thought when it comes to board games. So there's this artist that I really admire, and we're mutuals on a lot of social media, and she's actually a ceramics artist. And so she makes beautiful little creature figurines, and beautifully, she fires them, so they I don't know a lot about ceramics, but they look like they turn to glass, and there she does little dinosaurs or possums, or she makes cups and stuff. Anyway, she goes by Ness, by the way, KNESS. I think I'm saying that right. Anyways, she, man, I was like, it'd be so cool if she could actually design little figurines and you could make some sort of cool board game. So I'm not like thinking about the printed art. I'm thinking more
Yeah.
about like the pieces that you play with. Yeah, she would make some really beautiful, really cute, I think, kind of wholesome artwork that would be really, really cool. Maybe a different answer than you were expecting, but I think that would be, or alternatively, maybe a board game about ceramics and pottery.
Yeah, or I mean, you could just get a Nessus if being pronounce correctly art to make like the smallest print run like most like elaborate little like game with all these pieces would be that'd be something.
It'd be pretty great. She's also a great visual, like painter artist. She has a very soft, lovely style. So, oh man, yeah, you got the gears going in my head. I was like, actually, that'd be a lot of fun. I should talk to him.
Was gonna say reach out.
Oh,
Oh.
that's a good idea.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, okay. Well, now that some version of some game with that collaboration exists, well, it's in the universe.
We'll figure it out. We'll make it
Okay.
happen.
Well, yeah, that's your work, that's not mine. Neat. I think I'm trying to think where I am at with this. But okay, so you kind of mentioned it a little bit with that idea of kind of like working, like one of your first projects was for somebody that did the tabletop RPG,
Yep,
and then
Chromos, yep.
obviously, that's like a combination of kind of like writing, and then obviously the creative space in which a role-playing game comes from writing, and then your art in there as well. But kind of before we started, I mentioned that I'm super interested. Well, here's the deal. I took one class in college. It was, I'm trying to think of what it was actually called, but it's basically an art for theater type of class. So rendering for the stage is maybe what it was called, if I'm not mistaken. So all of my like actual time spent creating anything that was of some note, whether it was trying to create thematic, like set pieces or costuming or whatever it was done through that. And it wasn't particularly good, my work, but it wasn't terrible. And I really like, I don't know, there's a lot of times if I'm thinking about like a board game, like designing it or even kind of like taking a pre-existing board game and then throwing some art on it. There's definitely things that I want to do to get better and just practice and just play around. So coming from somebody who's not necessarily trying to be a like a professional artist by any stretch of the imagination, what sort of advice would you have for somebody like me to just, well, obviously, do it, but what are some things that could help me become better?
Ooh, that's a broad question. I like the question though. So, I mean, I love that you took this course in high school that was like a deviation maybe from, what you do or where you feel like your talents lie. I really do truly believe that everybody is an artist, is creative, And it's all about sort of nurturing that experience. And, you know, we may be inclined one way or another, whether it's, you know, sculpting or writing or art. And, you know, I don't think we should be afraid to try anything. I think we should. And the thing is, too, like, oh, how am I going to phrase this? Okay, so I'm not a good writer. I'll put this out there. Creative writing is not easy for me. I have done it. I have enjoyed it. But it is not a natural skill that I have. I don't even know if you're born with it. Like, I haven't spent the tens of thousands of hours to become a good writer. And I have friends who are creative writers. And, you know, sometimes they'll send me work. And I just kind of stand there and go, you know, how do you even consider me qualified to speak to you after I've read this? Like, it's just amazing. And at the end of the day, you know, it's just, it really is just the time you put into it. You know, that person's writing is just the result of, you know, tens of thousands of hours of working on it and reading and taking in other people's writing. So I guess that's a very broad answer or a way of saying, you know, just do what you love. and honestly, don't worry about what anyone thinks about it. You know, it's not like it just, I don't know. Everything is just an expression of yourself. I don't really know where I'm going with this statement. I guess I get very excited when people make things, especially for the first time. I get really excited when people try new things. And I think it's so important to be encouraging for that. There's a really good talk that I recommend listening to. And I actually listen to it when I'm kind of like doubting myself, I guess, or having like an imposter syndrome day. And it's Neil Gaiman's Make Good Art speech. It's wonderful. And he just talks about, you know, the creative process and just making stuff because, you know, because you want to, because you have the drive to. And he says something in there that I guess when you said, you know, what kind of advice do you offer? And it's something that he says, which is just, you know, consume everything. Like, watch weird movies, listen to totally random soundtracks on Spotify, go to art events. Like, the more you experience and the more you pull in and the more you know kind of goes into this like compost heap at the back of your head that occasionally sprouts weird stuff, and which is great, right? It's like your own creative interpretations of things. And so I'm getting really rambly, but I guess all I'm saying is like, just consume as much as you can and make what you want. Like, just don't worry about what anyone says. And if you love it, like, that's all that freaking matters.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's great. I think, you know, one of the things that I've kind of been thinking about a little bit, and just, you know, this has been like a busier spring for me. Spring's always busy for me. But, you know, even if I'm not necessarily creating, if I'm not writing, if I'm not kind of doing some of the things that I want to do, like that are, you know, output, like there's that level of input that I still want. Like, I still want to play board games, video games, listen to music, watch movies and shows and all that. And like, when I don't get to do that stuff, I'm just like, oh, like, I'm, you know, I'm so bummed, because I think, you know, there is that part of everybody who wants to, you know, like, consume and digest and think about like those different things in different ways. And
yeah, totally. And I think there's something too where, especially, you know, as creatives, sometimes when we can't create, or there's a time you're like, I've forgotten how to do everything. it's all over. And in reality, I think those are just rest periods where, you know, I'm going to misquote it, but I saw something the other day, and it was something about, it was relating creativity to farming. And it's like, the seeds are sown, you have to give it time. Like, the seed has its own job. You have to wait for, you know, the weather, and you have to give it time. And eventually, you know, creativity springs again, and you can't get mad at the seeds for having just been planted. Like, you gotta wait. And I think it's just so true for creatives. There's like a time for input and consuming all the right stuff. And then there's time for creating, but then there's also time for just, you know, void moments. I think something I suggest to people a lot who are feeling stuck is, I was like, allow yourself to be bored. You know, there's so much social media at our fingertips and so many distractions at hand that it's good to be bored sometimes. Like, it's those vacant moments where you're kind of just left to yourself and your thoughts that you'll start to hear your own thoughts and creativity and imagination spark up again. And it's those void moments where ideas come from. So yeah, I guess that's part of my advice too, is like allow yourself to get bored. Go on those long walks without your phone. You might be surprised with the stuff that comes up.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And to me, like, I wouldn't even like, it's, I'd say it's like the most minor disagreement. I wouldn't even say like allowing you to get bored, but just, disconnect with some of the that stress. Disconnect with, like, that need to, connect and like allow that wandering, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe bored wasn't the right word. Maybe it's just like you're not, there's just like, what's that Bo Burnham thing? It's like bored, apathy is a tragedy and boredom is a crime, is like the new social media thing.
Okay.
So, you can't ever be bored ever. And the truth is that, yeah, you have to like let yourself just like chill sometimes and go on those walks or, just be with yourself.
Yeah, no, that's extremely important. And so, all right, well, when so I guess what I will do kind of in response to that is, coming up in a couple weeks, I'll have a little bit more time. I will allow all of my the different influences around me to actually put, like, pencil on paper or watercolor or whatever it is. I'll just do it.
Yeah, just do it. Do it, man.
Just
Have
do
fun. Make a mess. Like,
it.
it's
Oh,
great.
it will definitely be a mess. Oh, awesome. Okay. I feel like I had kind of one board. Oh, here. I have one board game question, before kind of getting to, some of the wrap up, stuff here. But so, if there is like a part, you because you kind of talked about writing, so you said that you don't feel like you're the best creative writer, which maybe it's honestly one of those things too, where you have your specialty, so you're just like too critical of everything else. I think people do that. So I feel like people do that a lot. Like, I get that.
I am hard on myself sometimes. So yeah, that's fair.
But what's like a story, whether it's, like a bigger, more popularly told story, or something, like, just something that exists as a story somewhere, whether it's a book, a TV show, movie, whatever, that if it were turned into a board game and you could do the art for it, what would you want it to be?
Oh my goodness. So like a myth in existence or a story in existence that would be a cool board game?
Yeah, and then you would get to do the art for it.
Oh gosh, that's such a good question. I feel like a couple of things like pop to mind where I can think of like old mythology and stuff, but I recently rewatched the animated movie Titan AE. Do you remember this film?
I don't think
It was
so.
like a, I think Matt Damon was the voice actor for the main guy, and it was this story about like it's a science fiction story because I haven't done much science fiction work, and I was like, oh, it'd be fun to do like a science fiction project, and it's the story of Earth getting kind of blown up by this alien species, and humanity, of course, escapes but barely. And we're sort of free float in the universe with all these other aliens because it's the future and we've made communication. And humans are this kind of fringe species that has no planet and has no home. And the story is about the main character who has this secret key to something that could be a new hu like new home for human beings. So I would love to work on like a, I don't know, a science fiction like space exploration. I don't know, like science fiction-y kind of maybe Firefly-esque story. It's something science, yeah, something spacey would be really fun. That's a super vague answer, but yeah, planets and spaceships, I think that'd be so much fun.
Oh, nice. And honestly, well, they might be kind of redoing it, but I think, there was like a Firefly game, and it looks like one of those games that used just like pictures of the people acting from the series in it. So
Screenshots,
just like that. So maybe I don't know. I want to say that I thought it was getting remade, but maybe if like that story was, kind of, turned more like cartoon and could have like not pictures of people's
Yeah,
faces, like that
like
could
more
be the
like the
game.
comic. Yeah, like the comic version maybe. That'd be pretty fun. I did, I guess the reason it came to mind at first is because I did have this like science fiction solar system board game that I came up with, maybe 10 years ago. And it was my fault for never, never developing and never really running with it or seeking anyone out to make it. And a very similar board game came out just recently. And it was basically just because like the idea was somebody else is going to have the idea at some point. And they did a beautiful job and a beautiful execution of it. But part of me is like, oh, dang, like maybe, what if I had run with this? So I think that's part of the reason that Titan AE came to mind is because I was like, oh man, it'd be fun to make a space game. Space pirates, something like that. Yeah.
Neat. Well, I mean, next time, well, whether it's this game or like a version of it or whatever, then you can have like a full from like ground up where you'd have the game design and you have the art and like you're just like everything.
Yeah, I do. It's funny because when you first asked the question, I had a different answer, but that's I didn't say it because I am kind of working on something, and I'm hoping to have it fleshed out properly in order to like I'm going to play test it in the next few weeks, and it is based on some mythology that I really like, but I'm trying to kind of keep it under wraps because nothing's copy like nothing, I can't put it out into the universe yet. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping that I can sort of execute this idea in the near future. So, but I'm gonna keep it secret. So,
All right. Well,
yeah.
that's awesome. I mean, like we're gonna kind of start transitioning to the end, but like the final thing that I always ask is, things to look out from whoever's on, and even though that one's not allowed to be existing in the universe until like a couple weeks in the future, that's like something that I'll still be looking forward to too. So
Thank you, thank you. When I can say it publicly, yeah.
yes, awesome. Okay, so kind of like an idea, and I think part of this too is just to like send people this way as well to kind of like check it out. So in the show notes I'll mention it, but when reaching out to you beforehand, I did watch a like a panel, like a talk that you led called the Creative Fingerprint, and that was, I could have probably written the date down here, but it was like about a year ago, and it was in response to kind of like AI entering the art space and different creatives' responses to that. And it was just like a really neat presentation, so I'll link it, and everybody should go like take a look at it. And it was really cool too because, well, the slides and the presentation that you had going with it were all created by you, so it was just I really liked it. So I think it was really interesting, and kind of seeing how some of those things have like age or change, and I think different people in different spaces are responding to AI and in art in different ways, and on the whole, like I would say most people are pretty anti, I don't even know. I feel like you actually term the coin a lot better. It's not necessarily even like generative AI because it's just borrowing from other people's stuff and like re
Yeah.
like what do what, doing whatever. But I guess kind of like the first question that I have from that is, what are some of the things that you feel like have changed? Like I don't know any of these tools. Do you feel like there are different programs or people that are trying to like get away with this while not making it known, or I don't know. I guess what's like your current like barometer on the follow-up to some of those
Oh
thoughts?
man, do we have another hour? I'm actually really careful about how I consume like the generative AI news. So yeah, like if anyone's interested, you can go and watch my talk. I kind of cover, how this stuff functions, why it's deeply wrong in a lot of cases. And I remember when I gave that presentation, I knew it would kind of be a snapshot at the time because I knew how fast things were moving. And certainly, like going back and watching it, even a year and a bit later, you know, the technology has advanced, and so have the like the counter movements against it. So I'd say a lot of my feed is very, like, I don't know if bias is the right word, but of course it's all art, right? And I'd say everyone in my circle is pretty against this stuff, not only because, you know, it threatens what we love and what we do, but also because it would not function if it did not consume all of our efforts to then sell it and make, you know, a handful of people billions of dollars. So it's, you know, it's hurtful and it's scary. But in terms of where it's at now, you know, the tech only gets more convincing as it goes along. But there's been a lot of distaste for it. So, you know, there's been some companies that have utilized it, and there's been backlash, especially places like, you know, like some movie companies have done this. And the response when people realize that they've used a technology that steals from artists, you know, the feedback is quite harsh. Adobe's another one. You know, they keep calling their generative AI magic. You know, they just said it's magic. It's magic. It comes out of the ether and nobody gets hurt. And of course, the response to that is pretty vitriolic, because a lot of us in the creative industry, like in illustration and design, we've used these programs for decades in some instances. And then to have all of our work get kind of, you know, garburated into reselling it for pennies is very hurtful. So the laws are catching up. If anyone wants to read up more, createdontscrape.com, I believe, is the URL, or just create don't scrape. Keeps track of all the lawsuits that are ongoing. So we're kind of waiting for the law to catch up. It is slow, unfortunately, but it's that way for everything. So yeah, I can keep tabs on that. You can sign petitions. But what's kind of cool is, like, one of the counterattacks against it is the Chicago University, I'm trying to remember his name, Ben Zhao, if I'm saying his last name right, Zhao. He's part of the computer science department. And so he's developed with his team two programs that are still, like, kind of beta, but they work really well. And one is called Glaze, and it's something you can, like, put your artwork through, and it's a style protection. So if somebody's, like, punching into generative AI, you know, I want it to look like such and such an artist, because it's absorbed all of this artist's work, and it can spit out something that is, you know, in their style. Glaze is a program you can run it through, and it kind of protects it. It kind of confuses the scraping. So that's kind of cool. And then the second one they did is called Nightshade, which is super cool. And Nightshade is not just something to protect your style, but it's meant to confuse artificial intelligence. So the way that works is, if I illustrate something, you know, if I illustrate a dog and I run it through Nightshade, and it will kind of, like, inject a sort of data poison. And so if anything tries to scrape that image and learn how to create a dog from my artwork, it's going to see a hat or something. And it's kind of secret how it works, like what exactly, you know, it sees. And so next time it tries to generate the image of a dog, it's going to look a little bit like a hat. And the more poison that, you know, artists, and I say poison, I mean, at the end of the day, we're telling people not to take our stuff. You know, we've put hot sauce on the food in the fridge with a note that says, "Don't eat my lunch," and somebody comes to eat it. Well, you know, so that's kind of the idea. And it's less to screw up their, you know, their machine, and it's more about making them think twice about taking our stuff. So that's been the major evolution since I gave that talk a year ago. And I would like to think it's having an effect. I'm hoping that, like, over time, more people adopt it. But it's interesting. It's a really cool countermeasure against this stuff.
Yeah, that is all really interesting. And you know, I probably say this for different things in different capacities, but you know, a lot of the ways in which I am introduced to these issues or am even thinking about them is kind of like through board games. That's like one of the main ways that I, you know, consume like my physical art. And you know, obviously there's so many different spaces where this matters, you know. That aren't board games. I mean, but you know, that it's like a part of the, you know, the bigger whole, obviously. And you know, I think a lot of, you know, people, critics, voices in the board game space are pretty anti, you know, AI. Like, I won't review your game if it has, you know, generative AI in it. And then, you know, like bigger companies will like come out and be, like find out it's like, oh, they used this for their art, or
I
they
think,
did this, and it's like
I think, because at the end of the day, you know, like, I don't want to, I'm not interested in reading something that nobody bothered to write. Like if it's just generated text, it doesn't interest me. And when it comes to the board game industry, it's such a beautiful, creative, collaborative space. And not only that, like working with genuine people, it's amazing. You meet so many cool different folks. And I think to see a product that, shortcut it by using something that unfortunately steals from hardworking people, it's just kind of it doesn't give you a very good feeling. But I kind of like now that there's this movement where, they'll advertise that everything is made by genuine people. And I think that's really important. Like one of the ones I kickstarted recently or helped kickstart was Chapters, which is this massive board game, Vampire the Masquerade board game. It's huge. And there's so much gorgeous art in it and so many amazing artists who contributed. And on the Kickstarter page was a big thing that says, we only use, real human beings. And I think that moving forward will be, it'll be such a nice marker for quality and care. You just didn't punch it through, so quote unquote, the easy way. Like you genuinely cared about people and you wanted to make sure that, everything was real and everybody was compensated properly. And yeah, I think that's really going to matter moving forward. So yeah.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, crazy to think that it's not something that people probably were thinking about in a ton of different spaces, just a few years ago, and then all of a sudden it's like, oop, well, but
Yeah, it's kind of spooky. And yeah, again, I could do a whole other podcast on the ethics and the gaslighting going on, but
oh
yeah.
gosh.
It's quite the thing. But at the end of the day, I would just tell the average person, just keep an eye out for it. And if you genuinely, really, truly love, artists and authors and musicians, so support them.
Yeah, and I think like there's definitely like a movement, at least in board games, to have like more proper like attribution, like the design credits and everything like that has been growing. And I feel like sometimes I bring up games and I don't mention the designer, and I know I should, and I just like take for granted that people know what that game is and who the designers is. But I mean, it's still something that I take extremely seriously, thinking about all the different people who are involved in like the like all the different projects.
Yeah,
I mean,
totally. It's
that's
hard.
why.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's hard to remember everyone. I actually have a cheat sheet beside me because I was like, if these subjects come up on the spot, I'm going to freeze and not remember this person's name. So I wrote down everyone I needed to credit.
Yes. Oh, no, that's great. I mean, like it's yeah, there are so many different people who are involved in making these things exist, and as we kind of just talked about a little bit before, but like all the different stories that the different people bring into it just makes each creation like that much more special too.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so before getting to like the final question, I think this actually ties into the those thoughts well, is at the very beginning of the episode, I kind of mentioned that you've created art and all sorts of different, I mean, mediums, and I can't speak a ton on that, but just looking at looking at the work on your store, on your social media, and it looks like you've done some like very just like neat projects that are all over the space, like designing for Royal Canadian Mint, and there recently was a skateboard that was for a charity, and you mentioned the Canadian wildlife and doing work and giving back to the charities and everything like that. So I don't know. This isn't like necessarily a question, but I guess what are some of the things that you have kind of been working on there, and want people to like go check out and everything like that? Because I don't there I look at all of them like, wait, what, you did this and how? And it's I don't know, it's really neat like how your art can exist in all these different places.
I appreciate that. Sometimes I kind of mentioned earlier, sometimes I worry that my stuff's kind of all over. I don't have an incredibly consistent medium or style, but at the same time, I'm glad that people enjoy it and are kind of along for this like ADHD ride of, I'm constantly changing subjects. But yeah, and I get excited by stuff very quite easily too, which I think is probably why my shop carries, a couple different things, or why I've worked on so many projects. My shop might contain something like patches or foil bookmarks or pins, or sometimes, I got really into stone carving a little while ago. And yeah, people don't seem to mind that, it's not a consistent thing. But yeah, I've also been really lucky in terms of different projects that have come my way. I try really hard to just say yes to stuff before I get too nervous. So, like the Canadian Mint, for example, has been a repeat client of mine in the past, and I get super scared every time. Like, just it's such a like a nerve-wracking thing to do, but at the same time, like, how could you say no? And it's worked out really well. Yeah, you can also keep an eye out, by the way. I can't say anything, but there is one more coin coming out this October that I'm really proud of. But I can't say anything about it. It's top secret. But yeah, no, I'm happy to do anything, whether it's, stone coins, the skateboard. Yeah, just always trying new stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned it before too, but you like when you mentioned how, Joe Wiggins had reached out to you, and just kind of like having such a like this ex like expansive, like oh shoot, why can't I think the portfolio and like. And having like your particular styles like changing and evolving and just kind of doing whatever, like that's
Yeah, no,
a
for sure. And like a lot of projects, I feel like, they cross-pollinate. Like the only reason I got to work with Joe in the first place is because the illustration he liked came from a collaborative comic book project I did with a writer friend of mine. And it all just, yeah, it's just wild. You can't really predict any of it.
But that I don't know, it's really cool, and I think it does, speak to the creative like process, and in this case like the creative processes in which you are doing different things and just constantly connecting that. I think it's really neat, so
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
awesome. Well, I'll like I said, I'll definitely just I'll link the aforementioned creative fingerprint. I'll link your portfolio and your store so people can and social stuff as well so people can kind of see that. But before we head out, my kind of like penultimate thought is just like a text that has been stuck on your mind, and that's anything, show, movie, song, book, game.
Yeah, that's such a good question. My friend always asks me, "What's your current hyperfixation?" Which is such a great question. What are you into at the moment? It's actually it's a podcast that has been on my mind. So I used to listen to a lot of storytelling podcasts. And then, when COVID hit and I stopped commuting, I kind of fell out of it because that's when I would listen to them. But recently, I came across this podcast that really got a hold on me, and it's called The Midnight Library. And as so and I think I found it originally because I was doing research on like graveyard grims, like a like guardian spirits, and I found this podcast. And it's not just like, I love how creative it is because it's not just a story. Every episode is something different, whether it's fog people or witches or werewolves, or there's a theme for every episode. It could have just been an episode that regaled to you, the history of this particular myth, and werewolves over the centuries and how that story has changed. Instead, what they did was they framed it as somebody telling you a fireside story. So Miranda Merrick is the main narrator, and it's framed with, there's some Foley sound effects in the background, but it's kind of like if, I guess if more like if Morticia Adams was telling you a bedtime story. Like she's a little strange, and there's all these little like things that she'll say that kind of build this background lore about where you actually are as you're listening to this story, and who she is, and what are the strange things happening around you. And it's kind of storytelling and also like radio play. So that's been my current obsession, is because the more you listen, the more you get into it, and the more you start to kind of believe the world that you are within as you're being told these creepy fireside tales. So yeah, that's the one that has been on my mind a lot, is I've just been like completely devouring this podcast.
Oh, that sounds great. And I listen to podcasts, but I know that I need to get out of listening to just board game podcasts because it's like that's it. So this will get added to the library as
Yeah,
well.
sounds good. Sounds good. There's, yeah, I used to be pretty insufferable with my podcast recommendations to the point where I made like a Google Doc where everything was in its own category, no science category, scary category. And so, but yeah, that one's at my top at the moment.
Okay, awesome. Well, I mean, it sounds really neat, so it'll definitely get added, and I can take a
For
breather
sure.
from the board games. They'll exist when I come back, so
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
okay, so we have talked about a lot all over the place, and in those different conversations have mentioned some of the things that are coming from you. So you mentioned that work with Numeal Games. There's something that you're working on that eventually will be able to be talked about
Yeah.
once it starts getting play tested, the coin that can't be spoken on more until like fall.
The forbidden coin,
the
yeah.
forbidden coin.
Yeah,
Anything else that like can be noted for people to look out for from you?
yes. So I have one more secret project I'm working on with Bitewing. So again, I can't talk about that, but something else. Ooh, I'm learning how to letterpress print, which is like old school machinery way of printing. So I would say probably expect some letterpress pieces in the near future. And one other piece that hopefully will be done in the next couple of weeks is I'm working on a like a rise it's called risograph printing. I'm trying to make a little zine, a little book that actually documents the my personal journey of restoring an old family cemetery. So it's everything I learned, the experience behind that, the stories, and it's all illustrated. And I'd say it's about 50% done. I'm trying to light a fire under myself to finish it by the end of, within the next 5 days. So that's something to look for. It's because I've got like a personal deadline for myself. But yeah, that's an art piece that's been kind of kicking around my head for probably 2 years. And yeah, I'm excited for that one to come out and get it into other people's hands.
That's awesome. And if I'm not mistaken, you have like another, like I think an Instagram for that project or just for like the restoration, correct?
I do, yeah. It's called Grave Matters underscore Grave underscore Matters, which is also going to be the title of the book. But yeah, that was my I called it my COVID sanity project. So like when I when you know when lockdown happened, it was just something I started to occupy my hands and my mind, and it kind of got a little following. So yeah, again, that's something else I could talk about for hours, but I decided to sort of encompass my full experience of that and into a nice little art piece that will give me closure on the project.
Awesome. Well, in the future, if you ever want to come back and talk for another hour on that or the AI or whatever it is, I hope you I more than welcome wanted back. So maybe it'll
Yeah,
happen.
any time. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking about all these things.
No, I really appreciate it. Like I said, some of those questions sometimes I ask questions that I know are like tricky, but because like I know that if I were to be asked like any of these questions in any capacity, I wouldn't have anything. I'd be like who would I work with on this on that? Well, no. I would not be.
The To be fair, the adrenaline helps, so
Okay, all right. Well, I like a whole bunch of like extremely interesting thoughts and things to like just look out for in general, and I'm really excited and happy that we made this happen and for it to exist in the real world too.
yeah, cheers again. Thanks for having me. It's been really fun to talk with you.
All right. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Cheers, thanks.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most artistic podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.